All right, Kiss Army, welcome to the Kiss FAQ podcast. Thank you for giving us your time today and letting us into your head. I hope we don't do any damage. This is a Kiss-related podcast by the board for the board. We hope that you enjoy. We'd love you to support this show. Please like, follow, and subscribe to us on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. Your likes and subscription helps us to grow and attract interviews and content. So please retweet and share our posts. Your contributions are appreciated. All right, welcome to the Kiss FAQ podcast. I'm your host, Julian Gill. We've got Daniel Wiese. We're doing it at an hour. That's really good for you, aren't we? Yeah.
Yes.
2 weeks in a row. All right, Mark's Almighty Mark, also greetings from the dark north. You do have light out behind you. And, of course, the voice of reason, 69th Blizzard Ken. You know, it's the last shopping weekend before Christmas, so get out there and kill people in the name of baby Jesus. For that material stuff. Okay. So, we're going to be celebrating legends and wishes, you know, Kissmas wishes for next year. We're going to be talking about the legends of Kiss's foundations. But there's, you know, a few things to go through news-wise for the week. First and foremost, it was Peter Criss's birthday yesterday. So a very happy birthday to the one and only real Catman, Peter Criss. 79 years old. The mind just boggles as these numbers tick over, but I guess it's the same in our lives as well. Each birthday we celebrate, it's like, holy shit, I'm getting old. On the other side of that coin, there's a legendary Seattle Times or Post-Intelligencer or critic, Patrick McDonald, passed away earlier this month. And while you may not know that name immediately, there was part of his review of the band's 1974 visit to Seattle that ended with, "I hope the four guys who make up the group, whose names don't matter, are putting away money for the future, the near future, because Kiss won't be around long. Flash doesn't last." That, of course, became a very motivating quote for Kiss. And during the farewell tour, I believe that was posted, reprinted in the inside of the tour book. It was one of those critical moments in their history that really gave them the energy that they were going to succeed and make it. And Patrick simply wasn't a fan of Kiss. He wrote a review of their 1976 show with much the same, saying that Kiss was going to be taken over by teeny boppers and end up in 16 magazine and doing cartoons. Oh, gee, it did happen, so he nailed that. And then, you know, in 2008, when he retired, he signed off with, "What am I going to do now? I'm going to rock and roll all night and party every day." So he laughed a little bit at that history that he had made. So, you know, it was really fun. So, you know, rest in peace, Patrick McDonald. You're one of the the critics who made a mark and became part of the story as well. Where's Drago? You have no sound? Well, you know, you have headphones and you have a volume. Daniel can hear me.
Mark can hear me.
I hate to think I'm speaking to myself again. Because I do it. I'll just go off on a long tangent while I do this news.
The monologuer.
Yeah, there's every show, Jimmy Kimmel, has to have a monologue, and I'm no Jimmy Kimmel, that's for shit sure. All right, what other
news this
week? Yeah, well, Gene Simmons Band announced more dates. Ken, you're a cool, happy guy, aren't you?
Hey, I'm surprised. I was surprised to see that he added more dates, and I'm like, okay, it's all probably in the East, you know, coast or whatever. And I looked at it, and then there was one in California. I said, okay, where is it in California? And it's, you know, it's just a little bit up north, not far away.
Really. Next door.
Really next door. It is.
Roner Park is very convenient for me. That's probably a 30-minute drive at late hour.
It's closer to you than me. Yeah,
I'm not going
to
stay at that casino. It's $450 a night on the weekends there. Ooh, so
that's high class there.
Yeah, we bought tickets.
Well, it's a casino, a gaming casino. So it's a money grab. It's not my scene. I don't gamble. So
by then you've sold enough copies of the Ace books, or you're going to be a millionaire.
Oh well, you just had to. It's been
a millionaire.
It's been a very good week for the Ace book, by the way.
Cool. Good.
An interview took place.
That's good.
It was very, very good. So again, it won't be out until it's ready, and there's still a few loose ends to wrap up on that. I've got two people I've got to get in touch with to interview on that, but it's progressing. Project cool. number two, which is, of course, the War Machine that's mm-hmm. out for cover design. It's not done. There's still gaps to finish in, but I'm at the stage where I can commission a cover. And book number three is at 238 pages as of
this. Nice.
Wow. So, yeah.
A good year for books.
Let's talk about Alex. Alex posted on the FAQ, Real Eric Carr, Selleman first single. And apparently they managed to get a hold of the Crystal Collins single from 1967 that the Sellerman had provided back. Now, for many years, the audio that primarily has been shared has been from the rehearsal tape. I traded that out years ago. The single does exist, and I've had it since 2003, so a rip of it, but the copy is much better quality. You can actually hear it much better. If you want to hear Eric Carr backing this 15-year-old girl, it was a publishing deal, in essence, and there were ads. What's up?
Your audio is sounding like crap.
For some reason, it's sounding like you're talking through a paper towel roll.
Yeah. All right, Mark. You had something to show.
Now it's coming back.
Yes. Yes, I do. Well, he figures this out. So, as you well know, we had a postal strike here in Canada. I'm pleased to say that the strike is over thanks to the Canadian government forcing the workers back to work. There was nothing resolved as far as their demands and everything. They pretty much said, listen, you're getting back to work now, and that's the end of it. And so they're back to work. But, of course, they're not working very diligently. I see them, they're kind of half-assing around, walking around, doing stuff like that. Basically, I just wanted to say that I did receive something, though, and I thought that was lost in the mail because it was sent a long time ago. So, first of all, thank you to my friend Patrick over in your neck of the woods, guys, in California. He gifted me this FM black noise. Now, people might say, well, whatever, you can get that anywhere. No, but this is the very rare CBC pressing that came out when it first came out, like back in 78, like the CBC Corporation pressed, like, I don't know, what was it, 1,000 copies or whatever. And this has become quite the collector item. I mean, right now on Discogs, one's going for almost $500 for this album. And I was scared shitless that this had gotten lost in the mail because it happened right during when the strike started. And you know how things like to fall into a big black hole when something like that happens. And I just wanted to say thank you again to Patrick for sending me this and to let you know that it has gotten here unaffected. Yay. So thank you.
Yeah, let's see how long my audio holds up now. There's good. Another new feature that StreamYard's just put on, which they keep putting on features and activating them rather than
without testing them first.
Well, without telling you about them, which is just really obnoxious. Well. And all right. So just closing up on that Eric Carr Selleman single, since I don't know how much of my monologue was garbled, check it out. You know, it's 1967 that Eric paid his dues in the clubs for a very long time. And they did publishing, you know, recording sessions at Jody Records with Crystal Collins. They later did it for a couple of songwriters. And of course they put out their own single in 1966. So, you know, it's all pre-Kiss history, but that's what I love about it is all the tangents. And, you know, a lot of people just enjoy Kiss itself, but there's a lot more to the story of all the members. Last bit of music is Nick Simmons and Evan Stanley, the little collaboration that they did on Instagram, doing Simon and Garfunkel, The Sounds of Silence. Did any of you guys get to catch that?
Yes, I did. And while it was, you know, they sang it decently enough, but really, you guys, I mean, what are you guys, a bunch of like 60-year-old men? Come on, you can sing something a little bit more up to date than Simon and Garfunkel, for crying out loud. But anyways, but hey, what did I say months and months and even years ago about those two? Don't count out my theory yet about that. I have a have a feeling about those two guys. Why else would they be showing these kind of clips together? Don't just say, oh, well, they're friends. Yeah, we'll see what happens. Remember what I said. And Daniel, you're muted, by the way.
Well, perhaps they want to be avatars too. Daniel.
Yeah, it immediately got me to think of that Coverdale Page. Do you remember that record?
Yeah.
Coverdale
yeah.
Page did a record together.
Fantastic record.
Yeah. What about a Simmons Stanley record with these two boys? I'd love to see that. I think that's
there,
a good
there
idea.
There are no Coverdale and there are no Page.
Yeah, so, no, but I think it could be a cool experiment. I mean, make a cover record. I'm sure they will blow away Origins 3 if they do one.
No, yeah, no,
because I don't have my hopes up for that one.
I think I don't have my hopes up for a Coverdale Page Deluxe Edition with the missing recordings from that session. Okay. So.
Yeah.
All right, Ken, talk some sense into these boys. Did you see it?
I did see it, and it was cool. I enjoyed it. They didn't, you know, screw it up or anything. So that's the big thing is they didn't.
That's a very low bar you set.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Kiss fans.
It was okay. It was all right. I mean, I don't know if there's more to come with those two. Maybe they decided, you know, try something, or maybe it's just a friendly little thing they did, and that's the end of it. I don't know.
Come on, Ken, Mr. Optimism.
They're not
going to
be Kiss.
Why would you not?
I can tell you that.
Come on, I'm surprised that you're not agreeing with me and saying, you know, you never know what these two now. Instead, you go down the other route. I can't believe this.
Yeah.
Hey, I think there is a potential they could get together and do something.
Of course.
I don't see why not, but I don't think it's, you know, set in stone or whatever.
Evan's working on it right now. Listen, people, he's working on it, you know.
Yeah, I think Evan is a great guitar player, and I really like Nick Simmons's voice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To me, he's always been kind of reminiscent of that singer in The Doors, Jim Morrison.
Yeah.
Sort of a Jim Morrison vibe. And that combined with a cool guitar sound, I think that could be something.
It's possible.
Yeah. No, I thought it was very cool. Again, it's just a throwaway as far as I'm concerned. Well, the moment you put anything up on Instagram or social media, you know, it's exactly what it is. It's like, oh, that's nice. You know, it's good to see those guys just doing some music. And yeah, Simon and Garfunkel is legit music. A couple of boys from Queens, New York as well, Simon and Garfunkel. Simmons, Stanley, Simon and Garfunkel, maybe not in the same class, but certainly out of the same place. So, yeah, Joel Hoffman, serious question, guys. Why can't Kiss fans let the retirement go like other fans of bands that retire, like Aerosmith fans? why do you need something new constantly when they gave us 50 years of awesome music and merch? I'm going to go first on that. That's a really good question. But you know what? I just watched Beatles 1964 documentary.
Yeah. Mm.
Are Beatles fans letting go of the Beatles, or is the market letting go of the Beatles because there's still a commercial base for that? You know, Abbey Road, deluxe box set, super deluxe, expensive. George Harrison, All Things Must Pass, super deluxe. Revolver, you know, why should we let go? Why should we just sit on what is if there is more and the people in control of it are willing to put more out? So I say never say die until we're all dead and buried. As long as something's there. You know, if Zodiac Mind Warp put out a box set, I'd be on that like a fly to shit. You know, if Girl put out a box set, you know, same with Pistols having a, you know, a tribute band singer for them, because I get to see Matlock, and that's fucking awesome to me. So that's my take. Daniel.
Yeah, I don't know about Joel, but for me, Kiss has been by far... they have had the biggest impact on my musical style, life, interest, everything during my, you know, early teens and onwards. So it's kind of hard to let go, I think. That's the main reason, because it's been so present during decades of my life. And even during periods when I've not enjoyed the current music they've released, I've always been able to go to the live shows and enjoy them. And I think the last decade, I mean, this podcast is soon a decade old. I think the doors have opened up for me, at least, because I'm from the Great White North, you know, Scandinavia. We have a lot of snow, cold, and but not a lot of Kiss fans. So the last decade has been really interesting and sort of made me, you know, my interest has been reinstated, sort of. But nowadays it's more meeting other people that understand. You know, Joel, if you have a really, you know, big interest that you're really like, it's so awesome to meet people at the same level, but it's difficult. There's not a whole lot of them around. So like now we have one guy from, you know, San Francisco, one from Canada, and I think Ken is from, is it Florida? Or is it California? I mix them up.
California,
sorry.
Okay, I'm not too far from Julian.
So Florida is down south, and California is on the west coast. I always mix them up. Sorry.
They're both south.
I'm not as bad at geographics as Americans. But I can mix those two up. Okay. So sorry about that. But I think that's the whole deal. You know, meeting fans, and we need things to take place in order to meet fans. Just the other weekend, they had a thing in Stockholm in Sweden where you saw a lot of people meet up and have a great time. So we don't want to, you know, lose this feeling we have. And at this point of time, I think it's, you know, getting old stuff, box sets, that's a good reason to get together and talk and discuss and, you know, remember the heyday of KISS. I don't think I'll ever be able to, you know, completely drop KISS. And I know Mark has talked a lot about other bands that can fill the void for him. But for me, I'm not sure what to do when I don't get KISS music or live shows, because there ain't no band around that's at the same level for me. But I'll have to work something out. Or maybe I just lose completely all interest in music and
that's impossible.
Maybe I pick up a flute and start playing or something.
I mean, the Jethro Tull.
I'd say we're not like the Masons, but they're all different levels of fans, from casuals to diehards. I mean, I listened to Japan 1997 this week. I listened to a 1980 soundboard. You know, I'm always listening to KISS. I mean, 90% of what I listened to this week was Metallica. Live shows just up on YouTube. Nice. Mark, I mean, what, fandom fading out for you or what?
Well, Daniel brought up a very interesting point. Is he said that once this whole thing with KISS, you know, if it wears out, which I don't think it will, but I'll get to that point in a minute, but he's concerned about what's going to go to next. But I mean, I consider myself lucky that I have many other bands that I consider equal to my love of KISS, if not more. Like Rush, for example, is my numero uno thing. And considering that Rush doesn't put out nearly as much stuff, like extra stuff now that they're retired, as KISS does, which is an interesting thing, because most of the time you can tell which bands actually would like to retire peacefully compared to the other ones, because those ones are the ones that are not really putting out a ton of stuff, even on their own sites. I mean, Rush has, you know, maybe a box set here or a t-shirt that they're selling here and there. But, you know, other bands have tons of stuff. Like if you go to Bowie.com, his stores are ram-sacked with live stuff, all kinds of fantastic stuff that you can get, like, you know, official soundboard recordings and stuff. And same with, you know, other bands like even Yes and stuff like that. But Yes, they're not retired. But, you know, but there's a lot of bands that are doing, and a lot of bands, like I said, you can tell the difference between which ones are happy with retirement and who aren't, because like the record companies are really pushing some of the other ones. You know, if you take a look at that, like Zappa, his family that took over his stuff, they're pushing a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff coming out from the Zappa Family Trust and Universal Music. Well. Yeah, and Universal Music has been more than happy to push it along as well. Don't forget, us people who are still keeping the flame alive, the record people love us because they're getting more money out of a band that's not operating anymore, which is, you know, maybe 40 years ago, they probably would have never have dreamed that a band that's retired would actually have so much, you know, credibility still financially for them after the fact, right? So it's interesting when I look at it this way. So KISS for me, I love the music. I'm much like Julian, where I have a lot of this old stuff that I watch a lot of, I like a lot of live videos that I watch on TV in my living room at times, or I listen to concerts and stuff. I listen to the records still all the time. But, you know, I'm not heartbroken if there isn't anything new. Like some of the newer stuff that comes out, like I'm not jumping at it as much anymore as I find I did earlier on, right? I'm not, like, whenever something comes up on the Kiss store, I'm not like right at it. And it's mainly because living in Canada, the shipping is pretty horrendous. I mean, you take an item that's like, you know, $60 US, and then the conversion to Canadian, that makes it even more expensive. So you're taking about a $60 thing that ends up being over $100. So unless it's really something, you know, new or something that I don't have, I'm going to pass on it because I already have every single record in multiple forms and multiple variations. So why am I going to drop $100 for something just because it's a yellow vinyl or something, you know?
Yeah, I think just you just said something about shipping, which reminded me of a conversation in the post office the other day. January the 1st, 2025, European Union imposes VAT on all incoming packages, whether they're gifts or commercial goods. So everything coming in, that's what the USPS was telling customers. There was a Czech lady who was trying to send something. She said, it better arrive before January the 1st, or they're going to be paying VAT on that going into the union. So, Mark, I mean, a lot of countries have subsidized postage. America doesn't, and American postage prices have gone absolutely up the kazoo, just like everything else in this country. So,
yes.
Ken.
You're muted, Ken.
No, he's not.
I am not.
He was miming.
Once. Was this? Actually, not this time, Mark. How dare you? I'm not going to, I don't think I'll lose interest in Kiss or anything like that. Sure, there's they keep putting out same music out, you know, in different formats or not necessarily different formats, but special edition kind of stuff, colors and picture discs and this and that, but I hope for it's the box set thing that where we can get the new music or music we haven't heard, and that worked well on both Destroyer and Creatures of the Night, you know, and the whole thing. So I look forward to that kind of stuff continuing. I don't know. I don't listen to Kiss all the time or anything, you know. I've listened to Kiss so much over all my life that I don't have to. I can just sit here and listen. I can hear the music playing in my head. Yeah, I've listened so many times over the years. So it's you know, sometimes I'll have to be in the mood to put on, you know, Love Gun or whatever, because I don't need to, because it's just there. It's just, you know, ingrained. Yeah.
Just a quick comment on Ken there. I don't know if you guys use Spotify. I don't think Ken does, but maybe not Julian either.
Not.
Not Mark either. Well, over here in Europe and Sweden, we use that a lot. And it's always interesting to see at the end of the year what kind of music you actually been listening to, because you get this rap thing where they're... And unfortunately, I have to say, Kiss didn't make my top 25, I think, this year.
And
embarrassing is my top song was the main theme from Miami Vice.
Nothing wrong with that.
That was my number one.
Magnum P.I.
That was the song I listened to. Magnum P.I. was also on the top 25 list. I love those, 80s soundtrack, you know,
Night Rider soundtrack,
TV themes.
What was your top band for the year, Daniel?
Top band.
My top band was actually a guy I didn't even know who he was, because because when I've read a lot of, you know, some zombie books this year, especially a series called Mountain Man. It's actually written by a Canadian, I think. So it takes place in Saskatoon and places like that. Yeah, so I got a grip of the Canadian geography. And while I'm reading those books, I like to listen to intense music, and then I just used, you know, like the Walking Dead soundtrack and stuff like that. And obviously, one guy wrote a lot of that stuff, so that guy ended up in first place for me.
That's so interesting. I found that absolutely unbelievable that you had a number one artist, somebody that you have no clue who it is, because based on a book. It's I find that actually fascinating. Yeah. That's in an interesting way, you know?
And actually, if you like reading stuff, Mountain Man from that Canadian guy is the best series I've read in decades. Well, I read Canada's like 3,000 pages of from him last year, and I was just, you know, it was intense. And then I listened to that intense music as well, and then it gets even more intense. Yeah. So that was my number one. I don't know. It was called Bear or something. B-E-R-A-R something. Hmm.
Don't know. I haven't listened to Spotify. You know, I go and check out an album or something I don't have in my collection, and then you just leave it on in the background and in between all the ads. You know, it goes off and plays random shit, and sometimes it stops.
Ads need to pay up, you know.
I'm not paying. I listen to Spotify as a tool to see if I want to buy the damn thing.
You're anti-artist.
Well, let's get into some of today's topics. And Ken came up with these, so thank you, Ken, for doing the thinking, because I'm just not capable of it these days. But let's start with Kissmas wishes for 2025 and some of the things that you'd like to see happen for Kiss next year. You know, what sort of music releases you're hoping for. Joel, you can leave since you're good and happy. I guess we're not, so we're going to talk about our hopes and our Kissmas wishes, books, merch, movies, etc. Ken, your topic, you lead us off with your thoughts on those.
Yeah, I was thinking, I mean, it's not the main topic, but one of the topics, you know, the wish list, kind of what are we looking forward to next year as far as, you know, Kiss stuff? And it could be anything. It could be, you know, music or videos or books and so on. So I just thought, you know, let's list those out. What are we looking forward to? It could be, you know, tours and that sort of stuff too. So I think we can just probably list, if you have, you know, I don't know, did I say five of those or anything like that? Or
no. Nope.
Well, I'll just start off. I'm just going to list off the ones that I...
Well, you can do all of them at once or just...
I'm going to do for this. Not for the other Legends thing, but for the wish list thing next year. These are some of the things that I want or hoping for.
So no, first, why don't you do the Peter Chris Trinity and do your top three?
All right, I'll do my top three. All right. First, I think first and foremost, it's going to be, in which we just talked about a little bit.
Box sets.
Box sets. I definitely expect... 1 to 2 this year, I would think. I think they had some in the works already that probably before, you know, the negotiations, all that stuff happened this year. So whatever that one is, I think they'll finish that up. And the other one I think they should do is Alive. You got to do Alive on the 50th anniversary. And Julian's shaking his head. But anyway,
you're hurting me.
Alive, it's just, you know, it's the biggest, it's kind of like one of their biggest things other than, I guess, Destroyer, I guess, right? It's the thing that put them on the map. So I think Alive, and with all the extra information about that, the uncut recordings from the concerts that were used, that were recorded by Eddie Kramer, and so on. I think that has to be out. So that's a big thing for me. So top three, that's one of them. Another one would be books. More books, either about the music or...
You'll get three books.
Or specific... Yeah, we know Julian, the specific time periods of the band, you know, focusing on that kind of stuff. That's always good. We know Julian's done that a couple of times. So yeah, that kind of stuff. Books and maybe autobiography, you know, if Bruce decides to do something or whoever, that would be cool too. Third, I'm going to put up there, I'm going to put up solo concerts. because
you're kind of guaranteed one
I kind of wish, and my wish came true. So, Gene Simmons finally, you know, getting back over to California to to do a, hopefully it doesn't cancel this one, a date over in just a little bit up north, Rohnert Park, California, the casino. So that's, you know, and if someone else decides to, you know, do something, maybe Ace will be back in the area, or who knows, you know, I don't know what Paul's going to do. I don't know if he can, you know, do the singing. So that's the problem there, I think. So anyway, that's where, that's the three for me for now.
He hasn't even picked up a guitar in a year. He said he was interviewed.
That's what he said. Yeah,
yeah, that's what he said. So we shall see. And Brandvold actually posted on the Three Sides, maybe Three Sides should do a meetup at the Rohnert Park, Gene Simmons show. I'm like, maybe the KISS FAQ should do one as well.
So we can do one.
There'll be two of us there. We'll outnumber him.
Yeah, two of them.
We'll wait and see. Mark, what would be your top three KISSmas wishes for 2025?
Well, I'm going to skip the box. That's things I knew Ken was going to talk about that one. That's his specialty talking point. He loves the box set, so I'll leave that for him. But the one, the main things for me that I'd like to see, number one is the books. I mean, as you all know, I'm a big reader of the books. I have the books constantly open. I always have the, you know, Gene, Paul, you know, Ace, Peter book constantly open, the Elder book as well. I'm a big reader of those ones. So new books for me are a welcome thing because I love reading them, and I usually dive into them for long periods after the fact. So books are something that I want, and luckily we always get those in some shape or form by various people, but mainly, you know, the go-to author of KISS books. Next one will be, of course, I'd love to see a biopic, like some sort of movie that's been promised for years for now to finally, you know, rear its ugly head and, you know, have something for us to talk about and complain about for months to come after the fact. I think that it'll be interesting to see how they film it, who they pick, you know, how far they go, what they leave out. So those are always interesting things. And like I said, for us podcasters, it's gold because we have episode upon episode after the fact when they come out. So movie. And the last thing, and this is something that I don't know how many other people have actually thought about this, but this is something I was seriously thinking about. And I don't know if I would ever dare tackle this myself. If I was to do this, I would probably want to do it with somebody else, but I'd love to see a podcast dedicated to the makings, like not only just like songwriting wise, but I mean like technical makings of record, like some of these KISS records, like gear used, what studios they went to, like studio techniques used to get some of the sounds that they've had on the albums and stuff like that. I mean, I've seen people here and there do little podcast things on their channels where like, this is how you get the Ace Frehley sound from Alive. And they had like these little things with the Marshalls, and they said he didn't even use a Marshall. He used this Fender amp. They had little things where they showed different variations of amp combinations, and same thing with the bass drums they got into. But I'd love to see a dedicated podcast that goes through each album, goes through the different gear, shows what kind of stuff they use, microphones, everything. I know for myself, I'd be there from day one, and I'd be sitting there with, you know, full attention watching this sort of a podcast. So if anybody out there needs an idea to start a podcast, please take this idea and run with it. And if you have, you know, the know-how with the gear and stuff like that, please, please do a nice detailed podcast with something like this in mind. Yeah, oh, by the way, one last thing. Where's Drago? I did send you an email. If you can please read it, I'd really appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, is that your communications with the world done for today?
Yes.
That's two now.
That's two. No, Mark, going to what you're saying about, you know, the production, I wish they had that sort of details and notes about the recording of albums, but I don't think they do. I don't think you'll ever get them.
Well, you don't need the notes, technically. People have the know-how, right?
The level of detail that you get with, like, some of the Beatles recording sessions.
Yeah.
You know, actual studio logs. I know Bruce kept I've got some of his notes from Carnival of Souls, the FX box settings. He did the little colored-in dials for where he was dialed in on what FX, what guitar for the recording at Carnival of Souls. I think Bruce could definitely, I mean, if the interest was there, but, you know, to be perfectly honest, the Song Story series I did, you know, didn't exactly engage a tremendous amount. So are enough people going to engage in that sort of detail for it to be worth the time and effort of actually putting it together? But I love the idea. And I think Bruce would be the man to do it, because it'd be great to see him actually dial in a rig. And then
yeah.
Mark Slaughter did that for us at one of the expos. He dialed in his gear to get a Vinnie Vincent sound, and it was really cool to watch. But, you know, we're a very kind of captive audience. Daniel, your top three for 2025. What are your Christmas wishes other than peace on earth?
I wish, you mentioned Bruce Kulick, I wish Pop House would get in contact with Bruce Kulick and go through his stuff, especially from, you know, the Revenge era, maybe the Carnival Souls era, and even earlier, of course, because it seems like Bruce is really, you know, keeping stuff and cataloging his stuff. He knows. He's like the opposite of Ace Frehley, you know. He's very, you know,
organized.
Organized, yeah, that's the word I'm looking for. He's very organized. I'm sure he has loads and loads of tapes from the Revenge era and the Carnival of Souls era, and even further back. Get in contact with Pop House, do something, and maybe I'd like, and I guess Lonnie would like this as well, some sort of Revenge era box set. You don't have to, you know, do it just about Revenge. You can use stuff from 92 until 95, maybe demos for Carnival Souls and Revenge, and, you know, different solos from Bruce, different takes. We know that they tried out different singers for songs, for example Gene Simmons singing I Walk Alone and stuff like that. So that would be my top pick. Pop House, going to Bruce Kulick and here you have some money, can we have your stuff, and then do something with that could be really awesome. So that will be the coolest thing. Then I have to piggyback a little bit, because I love Kiss books as well, and one thing I'm looking forward to that will be released, I'm sure, is the Ace book, of course, from Julian and Ken Sharp and Ace.
You got to put Ken's name first, by the way. The order of the
no, Ace, I will always put your name first. So Julian Gill and the other guy. So
the other guy.
That's something that I really look forward to. I think the tidbits we've been hearing here on the podcast, it seems to be. That can be something really special, I think. And so I'm really looking forward to that book. And if I could pick another book, I would pick the Eric Singer book. But I'm not sure if he's really ready to do that one this year. Maybe we have to wait a year or two more. And I would like, you know, a behind-the-scenes look from the perspective of the hired gun drummer, you know. If he could tell, because Bruce is so... I mean, he's always been the studio guy, been very, you know, correct, and I don't want to upset anyone and so on. So his book will be, it can be interesting, but I'd like a book from Eric Singer, you know. I think he can be a bit more honest and also touch on the more negative sides of Kiss that we don't really hear about. We all remember when he left the band the first time around, the disappointment. He was quite... open with that. He was really disappointed, and he made it clear in around, you know, he said what he thought. Bruce, on the other hand, he always, you know, he was such a team player, and he never badmouths anyone. So I'd really prefer an Eric Singer book, you know, from 92 till the end. Of course, he has a lot of great stories previously from the other bands as well. He can include working with Brian May and you know, Alice Cooper and stuff like that. I think it could be a real interesting book. So that's my other pick. And thirdly, I guess new music or old music. I'm not sure if there's a whole lot. And also, I enjoy the stuff coming from Sam Bloom, but video, you know, you can't sell it anymore. But I like a complete Revenge era concert. You know, we got half a concert from Sam Loomis. I think it was awesome. If you could package that somehow, some sort of video, the history of Kiss, put together some sort of video. But I understand it's difficult now. The only way to earn some money from that is going through Netflix. So then maybe some sort of, you know, movie about Kiss in the vein of that Queen movie. What was it called? It was released a few years back. Bohemian Rhapsody. Right. That's yeah, something like that would be real awesome. So that's my picks.
Yeah, G Chup has a great one, which would be one of my picks, which it is, you know, going to be the 30th anniversary of the Kiss Convention Tour next year. And I don't know how much they have or how much recording they did. I know they brought in VH1, recorded some. I think it was Roseland, the New York City ballroom, just to set up for the MTV stuff. And that falls into 95. You know, forget celebrating that in 30th in 2026. But there are some other anniversaries coming up next year for potential. Mm-hmm. Most of them, I think, are just going to be buy a T-shirt and bundle, picture disc, and all that, continuing on what they've been doing. Yeah. March 19th, Dressed to Kill 50. Mm-hmm. May the 20th, Unmasked 45th. Mm. September the 10th, Alive 50.
Yeah, that's
September 16th, Asylum. 40.
Oh.
December the 31st, Kiss 2020 Goodbye, 5th anniversary.
Asylum, you get a picture disc of the cover.
I got to buy one of those Dutch picture discs back for Asylum. I had that back in the day. Mm, yeah. And that actually had a lot of meaning to me. Being it, what are the things that I want? Well, I want to complete the book, obviously, that you've kind of talked about. All three of them, two definitely for next year, one maybe for the following year, but we'll see. I want box sets. That's where my head is at. I want box sets and. Yeah. You know, talking about having Bruce go to Pop House, I don't know how much validity in that there is. It seems to me that Pop House is mostly interested in the makeup.
Hmm.
How much attention they're going to give to that other era of the group when it's not tied to the avatars is kind of concerning. And I hope that Bruce continues to wave the torch, the flaming one, if necessary, with spikes for that era of the band, which means a lot to many fans like me, who became a fan of Kiss, not because of the makeup. I didn't know anything about the makeup when I became a fan. So that would be my next wish, for Bruce to keep waving that banner and find a way to leverage what he does have in a commercially viable manner. New music from members of the group. Mm-hmm. And that's all members of the family, to sound like Paul Stanley. I just want new music. Origins 3, I'm interested by what Ace may do with it. I have no inside knowledge of that either. I'm excited that he's recording music. And if it follows the form of the previous two Origins, which I have listened to since they came out, not just put on a shelf like an elf, there should be some interesting guests. There should be some interesting song picks. I didn't see Kinks coming. I didn't see some of the Kinks stuff that he did on the last one coming. So I think that could be very entertaining. And if he happens to, get some interesting guests in there, I would love him to get Eric Singer in.
Yeah.
Because that being the Kiss lineup that we all kind of bemoan never did more in 2001, I think that could be very cool. And maybe he's had Bruce, so maybe he could get Peter to do a track either vocally. So we've talked about some of that before. Then do I need to pick a third?
Maybe.
Yeah. My wish for 2025 is to see Pop House start doing something.
There you go.
not just waiting for 2020, whatever, when Seven. The avatar is ready, to start setting things up. I remember years ago, Neil Young did a fantastic immersive website that you joined, mm-hmm. and it yes. gave you access to all sorts of wonderful material. It was visual. It was a real experience. Now, again, like DVDs, like Blu-rays, websites, as I know from the FAQ, have all kind of gone the way of the dodo in terms of commercial viability. But I would love to see them do something as a loss leader to start celebrating the intellectual property that they own, to keep the interest alive as we walk down the road to 2027. Whether or not we're interested in avatars, and I've poo-pooed it because it doesn't appeal to me from what I saw in New York City, but to keep us engaged. And I think that's the most important thing Pop House needs to do after taking a year where they've hopefully taken stock of the situation of what they've purchased and what they want to do with perhaps some of what they've purchased. So number one wish for 2025, Pop House, start showing us the shit. Come on. Come on. You know.
Yeah.
You have to wait a little bit more.
Yeah, well, I'm not making any demands. I just think it makes sense. You can't let the IP languish because you've got a very, very limited number of people. Well, 500 by the numbers available.
Window is closing.
Picture discs. Yeah, people are dying. It's not the window's closing. That's the fans are dying.
I was just saying it more politely and kind of more, you know, not so harshly. Yes, people are dying daily, so... Yeah. Consider that Pop House.
Yeah.
Our money is just flying away.
It would be nice for them to take over Kiss Online.
Sure.
Mm.
Yeah, that's a good idea. It's
kind of because stagnant right now for the most part.
Online, I mean, has gone the way of most websites. It doesn't have any purpose.
Other than to get to the store part of it.
Yeah, but that's the thing. That's the one thing, though, I find that they're still viable because I find... that I go to Zappa's site all the time because I'm looking to see what he has in his store. As long as you have a store that has stuff that's still new stuff through it, because I'd much rather order directly from the artist and go through some of these other, you know, third-party sites. They're much better for customer service, at least the ones I've had to deal with. Like, the Zappa store is good. The Marillion store is good. You know, they're all kind of, you know, more... they contact you. Did you get your things? You know, what can we do to help? Like, they're very good at these ones. So I never try to go through third party stuff, you know, and that's, if there's one reason to have a website still, is to have a decently run store. That's what I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was talking about the amount of time I spend on YouTube going from one Metallica pro shot to the next, and it's just playing in the background. It'd be great to be able to do that with Kiss. You know, if there are copies of all of these shows that have been filmed, reunion tour, oh God, throw up all those screenshots.
Yeah. You know,
we've seen Tiger Stadium like that. I could just sit on those all day long listening to Kiss. That would get me off no end, and they'd get their publishing. You know, all of those rights would be handled, you know, but have it all front-ended through a real Kiss Online. I don't see Gene and Paul or band members sitting down for interviews or any of that sort of crap. So it really has to, you know, be leveraged in a different way. But I don't want to go into doing the work for them.
Metallica has really been the masters of this digital era.
Buy your own fucking dressing plan.
Yeah, that's but you one know what? Thing. Yeah.
But Daniel, one thing that I do have to admit about is that you said that they're the masters of it. It's true that they are very much the masters of this sort of thing. But another band that does that and has done it before Metallica, I believe, was King Crimson. They have a very good site on there where you can go through their whole timeline. They have like a timeline on their site. Mm-hmm. And when you push like 73, they have all these like soundboard recordings you can listen to. You can download them in MP3 or Wave or whatever you want. And they have like complete shows on there, complete shows, you know, on there that you can listen to. And I think it's fantastic that the bands do that. You know, why not Kiss? They have tons of stuff they can do. I know, because they want to make money off of it. To them, it's money.
No, and they've sold their publishing, and they've sold rights, and there are other rights holders. And, you know,
but those people want to have the money too. That's why, right?
But I think a big
want to account for it.
A big difference between Metallica and Kiss is that Kiss, they are businessmen. Metallica, they are musicians, and it's quite obvious that there's a big difference, because I recall going back, you know, Metallica releasing, for example, my favorite thing with Metallica is actually that video they released in 2001, maybe, that behind the scenes. Some kind of monster.
Mm-hmm.
What an excellent, you know, naked documentary. You really see how a band works behind the scene. That's one of the best documentaries of all time, according to me. I love that one.
But of course, Daniel, you got to remember the big difference too between Metallica and Kiss is that Metallica own their stuff. They contractually got themselves in a great position where they own everything. They can do whatever the hell they want. Kiss can't do diddly squat without asking six people, you know?
I think it's kind of fun that Metallica also takes a chance at times. I mean, they release some real, you know, stuff that haven't sold squats, like that Into the Never movie they did. Looks great.
Or Lulu.
Saint Anger, Lulu. All of those projects are even worse than The Elder. So,
what blows my mind at listening to all that Metallica is how often in 2008, 2015, you still get Saint Anger songs coming into the set. They never walked away from their failures or their less than stellar commercial. I mean, I think Saint Anger still did a million on platinum.
Of course. It was number one all over the world.
How quickly did Kiss abandon Monster? How quickly did Kiss abandon Sonic Boom and just go back into that pure? Even Aerosmith continued to throw some of their, you know, deep cuts into the set.
I think Kiss were always about the sales. You know, if a album sells poorly, it's automatically bad for Kiss. So if The Elder had been, you know, like made millions, of course they'd played The Elder songs all the time. Metallica, they are musicians. They can tell that this album didn't do that great, but this is a great song. You know, I'm a musician. I can tell this is a great song. And some of the stuff on Saint Anger, the problem is, you know, the sound.
Yeah, the production.
Sounds awful. You know, the production and the snare drum, of course. So I like a few songs from Saint Anger, but there was actually a guy doing, you know, redoing the sound of the snare drum and putting it up on YouTube. So, and that version sounded pretty good. So the snare drum.
Thanks for coming to the Metallica FAQ podcast. It's nice to go a little bit off topic on that, because again, we all have other passions in our life and things that we listen to. Let's get into the other part of the topic today, which is legends. Ken, explain the theory behind this part of the conversation, because this I thought was a very good one to kind of talk about.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about what are the huge things in the past, and I'm focusing on the 70s, whether people, persons, themselves, events, concerts, you know, videos, whatever, legendary things that happened that may, you know, help them, you know, gain their legendary kind of status. Because, you know, Kiss could have stopped at, you know, 1980 or whatever, or after The Elder, and said, hey, this is it. They still would have had that legendary kind of status of, man, they did this and that, and this person was a big influence or to them, and if they wouldn't have been so big without this or that, and you know, it's the kind of stuff, things that happened or people that helped them on their way to make them what they became. That's kind of where I was at on that. I said pick five, but I don't know if we're going to list all five.
Rattle off your five, and then we'll just kind of.
I'll rattle off my five.
We'll corral them all, and
it was difficult because we agree on. Yeah, there's all kinds of things. So my five, in no particular order, is one of them is alive. Actually, I'm counting it as one. Alive and Alive Too. Those albums kind of set, you know, that importance of them, how good they are live, even without the, yeah, they recorded, we recorded some stuff, but how important their live show was. It proved that you didn't have to see the fireworks or anything to just hear how good that music was on the, on those albums, when they were performed live. So that's that. Another one is, Sean Delaney, and very important as far as the theatrics and influence there to, you know, the movements on stage to tell them to do this or that, you know, that, and even in help in songwriting and stuff like that. So that's a, he was a big, important person back then. Neil Bogart for taking the chance and just listening to the demo and saying, just based on that alone, without even seeing them, and saying, this is the band I'm going to sign, this band. This is going to be my first band I'm going to sign. And taking that chance and then putting all the money into them, everything they had into making them, you know, successful. The another one was Eddie Kramer, kind of related to the Neil Bogart thing, you know, the original demos that he recorded for him, I think was the big thing, which then, you know, Neil Bogart listened to that that stuff, and Eddie Kramer was great, you know, important on the live stuff, Rock and Roll Over, Love Gun, you know, and he should have been actually involved more on more music for them. So that he's a big part. And then the other one, as Legendary says, is the Kiss at Budokan 77. I was thinking about that was a big deal because they had, you know, exceeded and broke the record of the Beatles back then, having, you know, four nights in a row and bringing, you know, breaking the Beatles attendance record, which is back then, I was thinking, you know, that's pretty amazing. You think, you're talking the Beatles, which were pretty freaking great. Of course, they were in the 60s, but still, that's a big deal. So those are the ones.
Nice.
Yeah, there's some very good ones. I'm going to go next on this one because you said Sean Delaney. Yeah. And I think he's almost more important than Bill O'Coin.
Yeah.
Because there was, you know, as he said in his letter to Goldmine in 1996, Paul Stanley wasn't a he-she shaking his ass until I came into the picture and helping them work on those choreographed moments in the Kiss concert. I mean, he hooked on to elements that they were had started to do on their own. And I think it's impressive how much Kiss had developed without any guidance. But Sean Delaney is definitely someone who jumps straight to mind. Number two, you said Neil Bogart. Absolutely. You know, Neil Bogart kept pushing them for product to keep them on the road and, you know, making advances to them. He advanced them a ton of money and bought the logo and bought, I mean, obviously they had to pay it all back. It had to be recouped, but, you know, the financial backing and the ends to which Neil Bogart went to with Casablanca gave them a level of support from a record company that they would never have gotten from the likes of Atlantic or Columbia at the time. I mean, Columbia was threatening Aerosmith to shit can them after the first album. You know, they had to beg and give back the points basically to stay on the label. So Neil Bogart, Paul Lynde.
Yeah. This show,
is one, obviously, I never got to see.
Yeah.
But that cemented a whole segment of fans, you know, for Kiss. So its importance just simply can't be denied. Bob Ezrin. Bob Ezrin is responsible for transforming Kiss from stars into superstars, whether Mark likes it or not. It really doesn't matter what Destroyer did for them commercially and in terms of visibility, and Beth was purely the responsibility and wholly Bob Ezrin's creativity coming into the picture and elevating them to the next level. He was the steroids injected into that beast that, and no wonder they ran away from. And then my final one is another TV pick. Tom Snyder.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that was that was the exclamation, the capstone on that original era that really cements them to me. Daniel.
Well, I guess you've mentioned a lot of stuff that's important. It's hard to add anything. So I have to go the European route, I think, because we all can say, you know, Neil Bogart and Sean Delaney and Bob Ezrin and all those guys.
They're the really easy ones.
Yeah, those are these. But if you think a bit, a little bit further here in Scandinavia, I think there are some people that need to be mentioned. For example, one guy is Hans Hartwig. Have you ever heard of Hans Hartwig?
Yep.
Sounds familiar.
Okay. He was actually the founder of a magazine called Poster. And later on, he was the founder of a magazine called OK. And those magazines showed a lot of Kiss in their editions. Whole lot of Kiss. And that made, at least where I live here in Sweden, that really made a lot of Kiss fans over here. And this guy, he was just, I guess he was, he loved Kiss somehow. And he made them come over here. And there's some great shots from, you know, from the studios over here where he had some photo sessions that still are around. So in Europe, or at least Scandinavia, I'd say Hans Hartwig was one of the most important people in order to make Kiss pop over here. And you have to remember, Kiss wasn't that huge over here in the 70s. We didn't really know about them. So it was by the late 70s and early 80s they started to pop over here. So Hans Hartwig, we need to mention him. I'd also like to say the makeup, of course. The makeup was what made them legendary. Yeah. Without the makeup, I'm not sure it would, you know, happen for them. Mm-hmm. Not as fast, anyway. I don't think the music would carry them through all the noise that is. No. So I think the makeup helped them a whole lot. And if we're talking about the makeup, we have to say Gene Simmons' makeup and character. I think that character was really important for Kiss to make it. I mean, personally, I have to say it hasn't been topped since. There's a whole lot of doom metal and whatever they're called over here, Norwegian metal. They try to look mean, angry, dangerous. No one has ever topped Gene from
black
75. No,
King black Diamond.
No. No one is. He even sued King Diamond because his makeup was too close to his own, so he had to change it. But, you know, the character of Gene Simmons, I think, was really important in order to make them a great band and a famous band. So the makeup, Gene Simmons' character, and in Europe or in Scandinavia, Hans Hartwig, I think. So those are my three, yeah. Hartwig, it sounds kind of strange when you say it in English.
It's no R, right? It's hot.
Hot. I think, you know, it's actually a German name.
We need to get Bernd on here to give us lessons in the correct pronunciation.
Hartwig, okay. Or Bernd. So I think it's a German name. I think he was originally from Germany.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, Mark.
Hartwig. Again.
All right, well, it's funny. A couple of them, I thought I would have everything the same as you guys, but I don't, which is interesting. The first person I thought of immediately was Bill O'Coin. Without Bill O'Coin, I don't think that we would have Kiss. I think it's just as simple as that. Because, I mean, he found them. He had the vision. He had the motivation, the push, the cameras, everything that they didn't have and wouldn't have access to, you know, without him. So I think that he was immediately, and you wouldn't have Sean Delaney without Bill O'Coin. So there you go with that. Number two, I know most people poo-poo this, but I do think that it had an impact in their popularity and stuff like that, is Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park. I mean, we always talk about it, how crappy it is, but you know what? it was, I remember lots of people saying, including my sister, that they ran home from whatever they were doing that day to watch it when it came out on television. So it had an impact on KISS fans, or even some non-KISS fans, because they wanted to see this thing. And, you know, and there wasn't many bands. You didn't see the Eagles, you know, presents on TV, you know, Eagles at the, you know, Phantoms Park or anything like that, you know. So, and you didn't see, like, the, you know, any kind of Grateful Dead meets, the, you know, the Wizard of Oz or something, you know. So
it's the dealer.
So there you go. So that was an important time. Number three, and I think this has been overlooked as well, is the 1978-79 merchandise boom that they had. I mean, that there was so much stuff that came out at that time. I mean, it was hard to escape KISS at that time. I think that, you know, nowadays people kind of say, oh, it was crazy, all the stuff that they put out at that time. But, you know, they did a whole news clips and segments about that, you know, where they were talking about, you know, all the merchandise and how much they were selling a year at that point, you know. So all that kind of stuff, you know, made a big impact, and people still talk about that now. There was a book made about the KISS merchandise as well, right? So obviously it had an impact on KISS people, especially collectors, right? So I think that was extremely important, that whole merchandising boom. Number four, KISS Alive. I mean, that album pretty much saved them from, you know, being no more. I mean, if that record didn't do well, then that would have been the end of KISS. It would have been the end of Casablanca. I mean, there was a great bit in Ken's book where they said that Bogart went in swimming somewhere, and he went and he thought about turning off his oxygen tank in the middle of the water and just dying underwater because he was so, you know, upset about what was going on, and then decided to give it one more shot. And it's a good thing that he did, because look what happened afterwards, right? So KISS Alive definitely was an important record and definitely solidified them. I mean, how many times have we just said here now that we want to KISS Alive box set? We want to KISS Alive this and KISS Alive that. So important.
I think said that.
And one, the last thing is KISS Unplugged. I mean, that re-kickstarted the interest in KISS at that point, because they were pretty much dead in the water before that. I mean, the years before that, what were they doing? They were doing those one-off shows in South America and stuff like that. And really, they weren't doing much at all. They were doing fuck all, to be honest, at that point. So as soon as they did that Unplugged thing and it went on, you know, MTV and stuff like that, all of a sudden there was a big excitement about KISS again, especially when they brought Ace and Peter back out. And then we all know what happened after that. We had a reunion tour, and then KISS was back and mightier than ever.
I love that last pick, Mark. That's a really, really good one. Hmm. But I'm glad you went there with
Thank
Ben.
You.
Yeah, no, that's really good. I mean, and we need to give a shout out to the Cleveland Mob, of course, who helped with the finance of the band to keep the and labels.
Shout out to the Mob.
never forget those who do the dirty work in the background.
You're not killing anybody.
But you know, Julian, in a month, this podcast celebrates 10 years. What are your plans for that 10-year anniversary?
Party.
I don't have any plans to.
No plans.
I don't celebrate my birthday. I mean, anniversaries to me are kind of meaningless.
Except KISS.
Well, we KISS anniversaries, because we celebrate them.
No, because we have to, but I mean,
yeah.
I celebrate KISS every day.
But I don't think that's a meaningless. Ten years
not.
Of a KISS FAQ podcast. We need to do something.
Should do something, yeah.
I don't have the time to sift through 10 years of episodes. You know, we've asked folks in the past, you know, to chime in, and there haven't been many, you know, kind of picks for stuff. So I like to just keep motoring forward, but we'll have to see whether we want to do anything for the 10th anniversary.
What do you say, Ken? Do you think we need to do something for the 10th anniversary?
I'll bring the cannoli.
Ken, you need to unmute.
Yeah. No, I'm not unmute.
Okay, you're just thinking.
I'm thinking, yeah, maybe. We can do something. I think we can do something.
I mean, because come on, at the very least, we should at least be able, each of us, to come up with at least one of our favorite episodes we've done in the past. I mean, that can't be that difficult for us to come up with at least one episode.
I'm just afraid that Daniel's going to demand metrics from me.
No metrics.
What is the percentile of?
Yeah, yeah, but I think the one we did when we did our 500 episode was kind of a cool celebration. I'm thinking, no, but we can do the work. You can write the book. But I think something in the vein of that.
Well, our listeners, our viewers, what do you think we should be doing to mark the 10th anniversary of the KISS FAQ podcast? What do you want to see? And have other people outsource it. You know,
so delegate. You don't have to do the work. Delegate the work.
Outsource it. Excellent pop idea.
Nothing happens if you delegate to them.
That's true.
Yeah.
Burnt, you're hired.
It's gonna take over.
You and Daniel take over.
Have a crossover with the Let Me Know podcast, and we can do a crossover with them.
Have a three-way with three podcast.
Songs. Ooh, a three-way.
Oh Lord.
I mean, come on, we can have Tommy on there organizing his notes in the top corner. Yeah.
Get the baby oil ready.
All right, that's it. It sounds like we're done.
We're losing it
for now. Anyone have any final thoughts, or while I delay to try and find where they've moved everything to end the show?
I think we owe the listeners something, at least a small effort when we've done this for 10 years. I mean, some of the listeners have been listening to us for 10 years. I mean, to pay homage to them, at least, I think we should put in an effort to do something, or maybe, include them some way, or think back what has happened during these 10 years in honor of our listeners, because we've had a lot of listeners through the years, and some of them have become sort of friends, at least digital friends. So I think we need to do something. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. And like I said, sitting in an airport in London earlier this year, and someone comes up to me, hearing me talking on the phone, says, "You, Julian, from the KISS FAQ podcast?" I mean, yeah. The podcast has gone places that I never thought it would.
I think it's a good idea. I mean, Daniel is the representative of the people. Whenever there's something like this, you can rely on Daniel to speak up and let the people's thoughts be heard. So I think it's a good idea. I mean, we even did one on the Yes podcast when we had our 500th episode and our 10th year anniversary and all that stuff. It doesn't have to be, over the top or anything like that, but definitely it's something to say thank you back to the listeners and people who supported it.
Well, let us see what we can do. All right, that's it. You've joined us live. You've joined us with a ton of comments. We do appreciate it. If you're listening to this later, do chime in with your thoughts on these topics wherever you're listening to the show. But for now, that's it. From me, from Daniel, Mark, and Ken, thanks for joining us. And we'll see you next time. Thank you for spending time listening to the KISS FAQ podcast today. All sales are final. There are no refunds. If you'd like, look us up on Facebook or come over to the KISS FAQ message board and discuss the topic we've broadcast today. Don't forget to rate us on iTunes, Spreaker, or wherever you've listened to the show. We hope you'll join us again.